Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Let's react to Tuesday night's NBA Cup final between the Spurs and the Knicks before I bring on Kelly Eco from Yahoo Sports and Raheem Palmer from The Ringer to talk about a bunch of stuff going on around the NBA. That's all coming up right now. The Knicks won the cup 124-113 with a dominant fourth quarter effort, 35-19 in the fourth. Just look, Victor Wembanyama is 7'7". The Knicks made him look small. 59-42, rebounding advantage for the Knicks in that game. Mitchell Robinson, 10 offensive boards in the game. There's a possession, I think it was in the third quarter, where Mitchell Robinson and Karl-Anthony Towns were battling for a rebound with Victor. Like, just it was emblematic of the entire game with just the aggression the Knicks were playing with on the boards. And ultimately, I think this is relates to the whole thing last year with the Knicks. All year long, Tom Thibodeau didn't play two big lineups until the postseason when Cat and Mitchell Robinson looked really good together. And now you have Mike Brown using them in spurts together with Mitch and Cat, sometimes just one of them. Of course, he even put Ariel Helfrich in the game for the final 90 seconds of the first half. He made a great defensive play to force a transition opportunity for the Knicks. And then you have Mike Brown as well playing Tyler Kolek, second-year guard, in the backcourt next to Jalen Brunson, in really big minutes, biggest minutes he's had all year. And of course, the biggest game is the NBA Cup title all year for New York. But I came away from this for the Knicks is feeling like the franchise made the right choice, firing Tom Thibodeau, hiring Mike Brown. There's no chance in hell Tom Thibodeau would have been playing Tyler Kolek for as many minutes as he has this year, and especially in the NBA Cup title against the San Antonio Spurs. There's no chance Kolek would be with Westchester already. He'd be in the G League. And instead, Mike Brown trusted him as the second ball handler. It was a tactical decision. It's not like he was just throwing him out there. The Spurs were trapping Jalen Brunson with two guys trying to force the ball out of his hands. And so he brings in a second ball handler who can reliably bring the ball up the floor, get the team in the offense, make the right play, hit shots, make, you know, defensive playmaking, you know, deflection, good rotations. This is who he was in college, and it's who he showed he could be in, you know, really short stints as a rookie. But it's just really cool to see a young guy like that come in and have big minutes for the Knicks and support OG Anunoby having a big game. Jalen Brunson, again, having a really good night. Cat was out. It seemed like a calf injury at one point. Hopefully he's going to be okay. But he was good in his minutes. The Knicks just feel to me like a complete ball club. This feels like the team that should be the championship favorites in the Eastern Conference for now. You know, you've heard me say in this podcast how if Tatum comes back, if the Celtics make a trade, there's a lot of ifs here. If the Cleveland Cavaliers fix themselves, they were my pick before the season, but they don't look like they are a serious contender at this time. The Knicks are currently the favorite in the Eastern Conference, and I think we saw why this entire weekend, the way they beat Orlando, who's been tremendous defensively in recent weeks. And then they just, again, they make Victor look small with their front court. And Jalen Brunson's unstoppable. He's one of the best offensive players in all of basketball. And he has Mikal Bridges, who barely played in the second half, and OG Anunoby and Josh Hart making big plays. They have so many good supporting pieces, different guys who can go off on different nights. Sometimes it's usually Brunson. Sometimes it's OG. Sometimes it's Bridges. Sometimes it's Cat. They have all these guys. They have good supporting pieces. I feel like the only thing the Knicks can improve is Gershon Yabusele, who I thought would be a good signing, and maybe he ends up working out. Maybe he improves himself. But I think that adding that wing forward to the rotation, that's the one area of improvement for the Knicks. But ultimately, they're the favorite in the Eastern Conference right now. The Pistons are still a move away. There was reports over this past week that perhaps they'd be interested in Anthony Davis if the Mavericks move him. Beat writer Hunter Patterson, for covering the Pistons over at The Athletic, he said that AD's not on their radar. I think that's fine. I mean, if you want to beat on, you know, if you want to bet on AD to win a championship, maybe now's not the best time to do that, as we found out with the Dallas Mavericks. But I also think like the Pistons should be chasing somebody because they are number one in record right now in the East, of course. I don't think they're the best team in the East, but they're close. They could surpass the Knicks if they make some moves, and they should be aggressive. Then you have the Raptors. Jake Fisher at the Stein line, he said they're interested in Giannis or AD. He mentioned Domantas Sabonis. It seems like the Raptors are at least, you know, getting in the weeds of these trade conversations to see if they can improve the roster. I have some mixed feelings on whether they should actually do it. I know they've been playing really, really well lately, but, I mean, you're going to give up a Scottie Barnes to get Giannis. Do you really want to do that? I'm not totally sold on going down that path if I'm the Raptors. I don't think I would trade Scottie, for what it's worth, if I'm Toronto. I don't think it makes you better than New York or even better than Detroit. The Bucks, meanwhile, according to Fisher, they're looking to add Jeremy Grant, Zach LaVine, PJ Washington. Those are some of the names that the Stein line, Jake Fisher, had mentioned. Look, I mean, are any of those guys moving the needle? No. No, they're not. That's just not happening. I mean, go ahead, get Jeremy Grant. Go ahead, get Zach LaVine. Go ahead, get PJ Washington. These are, you know, PJ Washington's a solid player. Jeremy Grant's a solid player. LaVine puts up offensive numbers. Those guys aren't moving the needle for the Bucks. And I look at Milwaukee, you look at the standings this morning, they're in the lottery right now. I mean, like, we talk about the Bucks as if they don't have their pick for years, and that's true, but they do have the swap this year. And so if they miss the playoffs, they're not catching the Pelicans. The way it works this year is the Bucks get their pick or the Pelicans pick. So let's just say the Bucks miss the playoffs and they're in the lottery. And let's just say on lottery night, the Pelicans end up with the number one pick and the Bucks end up with the number two pick. Well, the Hawks have the rights to the best pick of those two. Atlanta would get the Pelicans pick, but the Bucks would keep their own pick, and vice versa. If the Bucks ended up with the number one pick, but the Pelicans ended up with number five, well, the Bucks would get the fifth pick. That's not the worst thing in the world. And so there is incentive here for the Bucks to, A, miss the playoffs with Giannis, they missing the playoffs and getting a pick, and that gives you more ammo to make additions around him this offseason. And B, they have incentive to trade Giannis in order to tank out and get a high value odds entering the draft lottery in a year where it's AJ DiBonsa and Cameron Boozer and Darren Peterson, three number one pick quality guys with some top three quality guys trailing behind them. This is a loaded draft class. And so I think, you know, for the Bucks, they really need to look in the mirror here and say, do we really want to continue going all out and trade for Zach LaVine? A guy who's never won anything. I think there's really an argument to be made internally that they should trade Giannis. And I bring all that up to say, like, I don't think they're going to be competing in the East. I think there's another team that could be if they trade for Giannis. But ultimately, I don't think the Bucks have any chance this year. Again, the Knicks win the NBA Cup. They could end up with the best record in the East. We'll see if they catch the Pistons, and they very well could represent the East in the NBA Finals come June. I think this team has all the pieces to do it, especially given what they did to the Spurs. They made the Spurs just look so small, man. I mean, 17 rebounding differential. Wemby was a minus 18 in the game. He only had 6 rebounds. I mean, just burn the tapes. Burn the tapes when it comes to the argument that Wemby is on a GOAT trajectory, as I asked Blake Griffin on Monday's episode of my podcast. If you haven't heard of that interview with Blake, please be sure to go check it out. I thought it was one of my best pods I've ever done. He's an amazing guest. But it was not Wemby's best night. Looked like he was throwing darts in the fourth quarter of that game, really struggled. I wasn't able to keep Mitchell Robinson off the boards. And I mean, just an outstanding performance by Mitchell Robinson. And you know, Wemby did not play the way he did on Saturday. De'Aaron Fox was chucking in that game. I mean, really, the only bright spots for the Spurs were their two young guards. Stephon Castle just, I mean, what is there to say about this guy? He's just making play after play defensively. He's such a dog, staying in front of Jalen Brunson and making his life hard. Offensively, the way he crashes the boards and the way he throws these cross-court passes, bullseye to the shooter. He's a low turnover player. He's not the most efficient scorer, but it feels like he hits clutch shots and big moments. I mean, this guy is a winner through and through. Stephon Castle is a winner through and through. I love the dude. I love the dude. He is such a catch for the Spurs. And then Dylan Harper as well. His best game of his career so far for San Antonio. He hit 5 3-pointers in the game. He showed what it could look like when he is hitting shots. And, of course, he's below 30% on the year from three-point range, just around 70% from the free throw line. I still do retain some of my concerns about his shooting overall, but this showed what it can be if he does become a knockdown shooter, where he's bringing, you know, hard, tough, just really gritty downhill drives into the paint on top of being able to potentially open things up with those drives if he's hitting shots. Such a good defender, such a good decision maker. He plays like he's a 10-year veteran already. Like, that's just the way it feels. If you are a casual basketball fan and you don't know Dylan Harper was the number two pick this year, you'd turn on a game and think, huh, Dylan Harper, how long has he been in the league? How come I don't know his name? You'd think he's an 8-year, 10-year veteran or something like that. That's how it feels like watching Dylan Harper. So Harper and Castle were the bright spots in the game for the Spurs. Everybody else, Wemby and Fox included, forget about it. I mean, throw it away, especially the victor has a chance to be the GOAT types of folks. That's a throwaway game for the Spurs. And one of the things I talk about later with Kelly Eco, he's coming up next in the show, is will the Spurs make a big move? Are they going to go after a Giannis? And Kelly seems to think that the Spurs are going to try to not mortgage their future here, that they're going to keep things together. And so you think about San Antonio, they beat OKC. We talk about with Raheem Palmer later, the best challengers to the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't think the Spurs really are. I still think it's the Nuggets. I still think it's the Rockets, those two best teams, but we'll see. I mean, if I'm San Antonio, I still feel like the way in which we performed on Saturday against OKC, we saw the best of what we can be. You saw, you know, kind of the lower end of your outcomes against the Knicks, but at least you got some playoff style experience in the NBA Cup. And that's the main thing I feel like this weekend here in Las Vegas. These players wanted to win these games. I mean, for the money, obviously the bag they get, a little over $500,000 for every player on the winning roster. That's a little over $200K for the players who are the runner-ups. They want to win for the money, but they also just want to win for the cup itself. I do feel like year three now that this is starting to grow a bit, and I look forward to seeing where the NBA goes with it. And that's one of the things Adam Silver talked about on before the press conference, his commissioner's presser, that next year, of course, we already know for certainty that they're not going to play the semifinals in Las Vegas. We know that for certain. What Silver hinted at is that they might play some of these games in, you know, big college towns or big college arenas, historic arenas. Cameron Indoor with Duke, you know, being the first one that comes to mind. I wonder about, could we just see it played at like other big arenas? Could we see it played at Madison Square Garden in New York someday? It's just going to be an MSG this year. Could we see a game played in Seattle at the Sonics old arena? You know, I wonder if the NBA could do some of that over time. In addition to, I mean, personally, I would love to see an NBA game in a small arena. I think that could be an awesome, awesome, awesome crowd. Like if the Knicks and Spurs had played at Cameron Indoor at Duke's Arena, that'd be killer, man. That'd be so awesome if that were to happen. Well, let's get on to my guest, Kelly Eco, and then later we got Raheem Palmer. We're discussing a lot. Like I said, Clippers with Raheem later. We're going to get into James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, what I'm hearing there, how they could be willing to trade those players, old Lakers, old Warriors, what's next for the Grizzlies. But first, with Kelly Eco, we get a lot else to discuss, including Jalen Green, the Grizzlies, the Nuggets, and the Rockets and the Spurs. That's all coming up right now with Kelly Eco. All right, now to talk about some of the latest news around the NBA, Kelly Eco from Yahoo Sports. Kelly, how are you?
Good. What's up, Kelsey?
Joining me here in Las Vegas. We're going to talk about some of the non-NBA Cup teams today. And I want to start off with the Memphis Grizzlies. Ja Morant came back on Friday. Of course, he is involved in a situation here where the Grizzlies are losing games. Yeah. He wasn't happy earlier in the year. It seems to me, Kelly, that the Grizzlies want to see this team together. Edie's out now, though. What are you hearing about the Grizzlies? What direction do you think they want to go or will go here?
So if you're trying to look at or evaluate Memphis right now, it's kind of hard because, like you said, the ins and outs of injuries, the inconsistencies on the floor. They're actually 7-3 in the last 10 games. But now with Zach out and Ja back in, earlier the problems about the ball movement, the stagnation, you want to see how can you correct that moving forward. Ultimately, it looks like Ja isn't comfortable in this system under Tuomo Sisalo. The ball movement, everything that's asked of a point guard as a lead ball handler. So you kind of wonder if the time is ticking on Ja's time in Memphis. If you look around the NBA, one team to me that makes sense for a deal is the Cleveland Cavaliers. They could use a jolt. Darius Garland obviously is – the efficiency is kind of down this year in terms of points per shot attempt. But as a playmaker, he's still commanding, 31% of his teammates' shots. They could use that in Memphis as a guy that could run the Isalo system to perfection, get guys all ball movement, player movement. And ultimately, I think John needs a fresh start somewhere. I think he's such a dynamic player, but it's clearly not working over the last couple of years in Memphis, and maybe pairing him with Donovan Mitchell could bring out the best in him.
I would hate that for Cleveland. I mean, Garland is struggling, of course.
Yeah.
But, like, I still love the idea of Garland in that environment.
Right.
You know, with his shooting, with his connective playmaking, and he can lead playmake when necessary as well. I mean, he's got the beautiful floater in the lane.
Yeah.
I think, like, the idea of Garland at full strength, I prefer that to whatever John Morant is today. And more likely Darius Garland gets back to that all-star level than it is John Morant gets back to like top 15-ish level.
Right.
But I'm intrigued by the idea because like Cleveland's a name you don't hear a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people talk about the Wolves. Obviously, right now they're old with Mike Conley at the position. Rob Dillingham, very young and he's not completely ready, hasn't shown enough yet. So the Wolves are a team you hear a lot, but the Cavs are not a team I've thought about until this moment.
Yeah.
For Ja Morant.
Yeah.
And do you feel like they're a team that could be a team that shakes things up considering they're just a little bit over 500 this year? They're underwhelmed for a team that had finals, you know, hopes last year, entered again with finals hopes this year. People thought they might be better. Evan Mobley's supposed to take a leap. You know, all these young, they get Lonzo Ball and they change up the rotation. The Cavs are supposed to be better, but they're not. Do you think they're a team that could potentially end up making a big move with one of their core four?
Maybe as of December 15th, no. But I do think, going back to what you said about their inconsistency, the injuries, they haven't been able to have guys available. And when you can't see your team at full strength, it's kind of hard, especially in the Eastern Conference, to see where this team stacks up. Now, if we get closer to February 15th and they're still in that playing range, maybe they try and make a move here. But I do think it's more on the Memphis side in terms of trying to see – where does this core look like? Cedric Cowart, Jalen Wells, Zach Edey, Vince Williams Jr. It's clear of what their identity should be moving forward. Does Ja fit in that? I don't particularly think so. And I do think that to a team like Minnesota that's looking for a point guard, they looked at Ja Morant, James Harden to an extent as well. There are teams that, although Ja's value might not be as robust as you would expect a young player at that caliber to be today, I do think that you could find some value for Ja in the open market. It just comes down to what do the Grizzlies think is suitable. Now, by all accounts, you know, Zach Kleiman and those guys, they are very high on Ja Morant and they aren't trying to move him right now, but this is December 15th. Things can change in 2 months pretty quickly, as you've seen over
the last couple of years. I think that this is ultimately going to be the evaluation period for Ja Morant. Granted, like you would have loved to have seen him with Zach Edey on the floor. They lost on Friday night. We're recording this on Monday afternoon before their game against the Clippers.
Right.
And then they have the Wolves on Wednesday, both of those games on the road. So they have, you know, some easy games coming up against the Wizards, tough games against the Thunder. So it's like an interesting schedule for them to see if they continue winning. As you said, they were 7 out of 10 entering Ja's return, 7 out of 10 games won in the month without Ja. Do they lose Friday? Do they continue winning or do they start skidding again? And I think that ultimately is going to be the question with or without Zach Edey. How does this team look without Ja Morant? And that answer we'll find out in the coming weeks. A team that has been without one of their additions this offseason is the Phoenix Suns. Yeah. Jalen Green, we've seen him for only two games so far in Phoenix after he was traded from the Rockets to the Suns in return for a big package with Kevin Durant. When is Jalen Green coming back? Do you know anything there, Kelly?
So I spoke to Jalen. I think the Suns came to Houston a few weeks ago, and he was in great spirits. His plan or his target is to return on that final road trip of the season. They have two games in New Orleans, then they go to Cleveland. He's getting this, an extra opinion on the hamstring right now, and his goal is to come back in that last trip of the year. Now, the reason why that's important is because when you look at the Suns, who are free-falling right now, they could use some inside-outside balance. I think they're like a bottom seven team in terms of points off of drives. Jalen Green's one of the best drivers, you know, when fully healthy. Obviously, they put a lot on Devin Booker's plate. Dylan Brooks has also played well. But it's clear that the way that this odd system is supposed to work, you need an extra ball handler besides Devin Booker that can command pressure, draw gravity, get guys open shots, that free-flowing three-point shot heavy attack. So if they get Jalen Green back end of December, I think there's still enough there where they could challenge for a playing spot. Now, it's going to take, you know, how does he look? I know the one game he played looked fantastic.
He's awesome. 29 points in 23 minutes.
So the efficiency was there, and you can kind of see that the joy in his game coming back a little bit, unfortunately, with the injury and the absence. But I do think he's that good of a player where if you can have him in the system with as much space as he needs, you could see the best version of Jalen Green. So the goal is for them to have him back late December and then kind of see if he can kick on.
Yeah, that late game road trip, our late year 2025 calendar year road trip for the Suns. They have two games against the Pelicans back-to-back days on the 26th and 27th, then the Wizards, and then the Cavaliers on New Year's Eve before heading back home. So hopefully Jalen Green can get back then. Obviously, he was traded by the Rockets. You know, on my podcast with Chris Haynes earlier in the week, I asked him about, you know, Giannis teams, you know, because he had talked to Giannis and, you know, this, you know, what's the deal there? Who is going to be the teams that actually go for him or that would have interest? And I made the argument, like, I think the Rockets and Spurs should, you know, really think about going for Giannis, especially the Spurs. Right. Rockets, I'm a little less certain about. Do you think either of those teams, Rockets or Spurs, are realistic as teams that could make a hard push for Giannis?
Right now, no. Started with Houston. I do think that, and speaking to the Rockets pretty frequently, they are so high on that young core that even though Giannis is a future Hall of Famer and all-time great, he does warrant the discussion internally of, hey, this is a guy that could be available. What should we do? The problem is that, you know, when the Rockets have spoken to the Milwaukee, just on a regular general, like a check-in conversation, the Bucks keep saying that they're not trying to trade him. And then, in fact, they're trying to add pieces to him. Now, you know, if you believe that, you know, because the Bucks are where they are, that's another argument for another day. But the price for him alone would probably be way too high if you're Houston. You're asking for probably Amen Thompson, maybe Alperen Şengün, maybe both of them, like filler picks, future picks, pick swaps. And the Rockets are, what, top three team in the West? They still haven't seen their team at full strength. Dorian Finney-Smith Jr. is going to come back. Tari Eason is going to come back. There's a huge belief within that system that they can challenge for a title right now without Giannis. So they added Kevin Durant, who's playing well with Alperen Şengün. That two-man game, Reed Shepard, has been fantastic. And Ime seems to have this thing really to put together on both ends of the floor. So I do think for Houston, it's not something that they'll be willing to do. And similar for the Spurs as well, because you see now they're in the cup final. They're 18-7. That was the first game that they had their full team healthy and available. So similar to Houston in terms of trying to mortgage their future, they're not really interested in that right now. It doesn't make a lot of sense for them. Now, obviously, Giannis and Wemby is a basketball player's dream, right? And if you're 29 other teams and you have Wemby, maybe you do go get Giannis. But for where the Spurs are right now, from a culture building standpoint, I don't think that's something that they're pretty interested in right now at this moment.
Hmm. I don't know. You have a chance to go get a top 20-ish player ever. Still in his prime years at this point. I think there's a real argument to go get that guy. Especially with the Spurs, they beating Oklahoma City. It's just one game.
Yeah.
It's just one game. You're not going to overreact to it, but they also were 9-3 in games without Victor Wembanyama.
Right.
We know what he's capable of. He can look like the best player in the world on any given night.
Right.
And someday, assuming good health, assuming durability, he will be the best player in the world. That will happen someday if he stays healthy. Like, you got a chance to go pair him with Giannis Antetokounmpo for picks and replaceable level role players as salary filler. And maybe you do have to give Dylan Harper. Maybe you do have to give Stephon Castle. I lean towards training Harper in the sense that, like, Castle is further ahead with a real solidified role
and
on that team. But there's also a chance you wouldn't have to give up either of them. Like, so there's a chance of that. Maybe you get more picks heavy. So I think that puts you, you know, even if it's slightly below OKC, it puts you right there with OKC, arguably side by side with them. And it's in my opinion, I think for the Spurs, it doesn't compromise your future when you still would have Victor Wembanyama, who's still just in the infancy of his development, and you'd still have a bunch of other young guys on your team as well. And you'd still have some picks left over. It's not like you're giving up 10 firsts. You still have some leftover picks. And so I think the Spurs could have their cake and eat it too, essentially. Whereas the Rockets, that team's a bit further ahead right now, on paper at least. I think they have an established situation. You would probably have to give up an Amen Thompson, who is more proven than Dylan Harper and Stephon Castle on the Spurs side of things. I think it's a tougher question for the Rockets, considering Şengün and KD, their solidified roles in that Houston offense. And how does Giannis disrupt that, particularly with Şengün? But I think Giannis just slides right into the Spurs and just fits. I think it just works with him. Are there any other teams that you think would be more likely to make an acceptable offer to the Milwaukee Bucks for Giannis?
Miami? You know, I mean, and I think the Heat are...
Does Giannis want to go there, you think?
That's the thing.
I mean, probably, because it's, you know, it's Miami and...
But the Knicks are probably, you know, they're by and large the favorite. They should be, at least, because that's where, you know, in the summer we heard the most noise come out of and they talked. But
even the Knicks, I mean, how do Brunson and Giannis fit together? Like that is a legitimate question.
It's a legitimate question. I do think that if you were to use Giannis more kind of like an upscaled version of OG in terms of you could have him as inverted pick and rolls, you could run that for Jalen Brunson. We saw Brunson, who's a willing screener as well, to get Giannis some downhill driving and still have the floor spacing in New York. But the fit, it might be a bit clunky in terms of what they already have going on, but Giannis is so good that if you had the chance, my personal opinion, if he's available, you go do it. Now, going back to the durability thing with him and Wemby, we could be seeing a situation where both of those guys are out. And now what do you do? So I think if you're a front office, you kind of have to weigh the pros and cons of both sides, because he's not he's not a spring chicken we're talking about here.
It's very possible the Bucks just end up keeping Giannis here. And, you know, as Eric Neame, your old teammate at The Athletic, reported today, as you also reported that the Bucks are saying, they're signaling they're trying to add.
Right.
I mean, with what assets, beats me. I don't know what you're adding. I mean, equivalent to Kyle Kuzma, good luck. I don't think there's anything there for them. A team that I'm intrigued by that, like, nobody ever really talks about with trade stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons we're talking trades here is because it is December 15th. This is where a lot of players become trade eligible. The Nuggets.
Oh,
they made a big move this offseason. They flipped Michael Porter Jr. They bring in Cam Johnson. They signed Bruce Brown, Tim Hardaway Jr., among others. And they're great so far this year. They're 18-6. They went off to their best start in franchise history. But do you think the Nuggets are a team that could explore trades here?
I think so. I think they should. If you're trying to look at the pure load that Nikola Jokic has to shoulder on a nightly basis, I think this year he's having career highs in assist percentage, assist to usage ratio, points per shot attempt, and he's still the focal point on every night at any given possession in Denver the last 10 whatever years. I do think that you should be able to explore getting him some help. One guy that I think would fit like a glove there is Paul George. And now people, they may feel how they feel about Paul George, but if you look at December, particularly Paul George's December, 20 points a game, 55% from three on six attempts per, three assists, five rebounds. He's looking more and more like the Paul George of old. And I think if you can pair that with a Nikola Jokic and have that inside out, three level efficiency kind of two-man game, along with Jamal Murray, I think you do it. I think you give yourselves the best shot at taking down the Thunder. Because if you go back to last year's playoffs, Denver gave them a real run for their money, and the Thunder kept saying that was the one team that they were concerned about.
Here's my thing, though. For what? I mean, he makes $50 million.
So the money part is what you probably get a third, maybe a fourth team involved, because
giving up Cam Johnson. I'm not giving up Aaron Gordon. Zeke Nagy, you know, I'll drive him to the airport, but it's like, it's hard to get to the 50 million.
The money wise from just two teams alone. You might have to expand.
It's very tough. But in other words, you're saying that you would, I mean, after trading Michael Porter Jr. for Cam Johnson, you'd be looking to upgrade the Cam Johnson slot.
Yeah, I would.
And that's in part because you want somebody who can handle a little bit more.
A bit more dynamic.
I mean, it's funny, like Michael Porter Jr. showing a hell of a lot off the dribble this year with the Brooklyn Nets.
Greener on the other side.
I mean, great for him with the opportunity he's shown. Right. Maybe you reverse that deal, but I mean, ultimately, I think Paul George. The idea of Paul George makes sense, but I don't know. Like, I'd have to give up too many core pieces if I'm the Nuggets to do something like that. Truthfully, I think come playoff time, like Jamal Murray just increased usage, Aaron Gordon increased usage. I don't think I'd touch Denver right now. Personally, it's one of the few teams I look at and I'm like, let's stick with what we got. That's the way I feel about the Nuggets. Fair. But the problem is health. Aaron Gordon's out. He suffered some injuries in recent years. You know, we'll see. Well, with a guy like him, if he can actually, you know, return to the level he looked like he was early this season, when he looked like a guy that was going to be an all-star.
Yeah.
He really, like, the three-point shot for him, the way Aaron Gordon went from a non-shooter in Orlando, really, let's like rewind further. At Arizona in college, where he was a liability from the free throw line, he went from a borderline hackable player in order to a non-shooter in Orlando to a he's not bad shooter to a pretty sniper. Good shooter with the Nuggets to a high volume, high efficiency shooter with Denver last year, and then increasing the volume this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Kawhi Leonard is the player everybody talks about for like one of best shooting developmental stories. Aaron Gordon's like right there. It's just happening over a longer period of time with what he's done in his entire career. It's crazy.
Yeah. So I do agree in the sense that in a vacuum and all things being considered, a healthy Aaron and Jamal and Christian Braun is enough, right, to contend. The health availability thing is a big question to me. And Christian Braun's out still for a couple weeks. Aaron Gordon, if you're Denver, how much responsibility do you want to put on Nikola's shoulders and for how long, right? Like he can handle it. He's his best player in the NBA, arguably. And, you know, arguably MVP candidate right now. But I don't know. I just think come playoff time, I'm not sure if you can hang your hat on, we'll have Aaron Gordon at 100% and Christian Braun. All these guys ready to go, especially if you're trying to win now and maximize the window that you have today. So maybe Paul George isn't the guy, but I'm pretty sure that there are some cheaper, more team-friendly options that you could explore if you're trying to make simple upgrades around on the perimeter.
We went to Momofuku for dinner on Sunday.
Oh, my God.
What was your favorite dish we had?
Listen. Momofuku, this is not an ad. KOC, get him a brand deal. He needs that. This man, that was an experience. Like, I'm not a big like culinary guy in terms of like that was an experience.
You were a little hesitant with some of them. You were like, what are these cucumbers?
Yeah, I'm not eating pickled grapes. But it was fantastic.
The pork shoulder.
Pork shoulder.
The bosam. Oh, yep. Man.
Buns.
The buns.
Come on.
I love the buns. Yeah,
that was great. That was great.
You have pork buns. You had the shrimp bun.
Yeah.
They got the caviar buns, which has fried chicken in it.
The food was delicious. So much, I fell asleep trying to catch up on the Pluribus. I couldn't.
Oh, that shit was terrible. So boring. You fell asleep during the 15-minute adventure?
It's with the
guy. Like, how many times, like, if anybody who watches Pluribus on Apple TV, it's a show by Vince Gilligan, the creator of Breaking Bad. Obviously, Vince Gilligan is a legend. I want to love Pluribus. I think it's got some intriguing ideas, as you and I talked about over dinner. But, man.
But you made a good point, though, about some creators needing editors. And this is just like that control or the other voice in the room. in terms of creating the show and what that entails. Because in a vacuum, the storyline makes a lot of sense. Like, it's a good diversion from what we're used to in terms of end of the world shows and zombies and all that stuff. And the take on it is good, but the execution part is where I think.
I mean, how many examples of like the man character in the show, yeah. Like non-spoiler alert, like he gets developed. It's a non-spoiler, like I said, in this most recent episode, there's like a 12-minute segment building his character to show he's resilient. Is this the part where you fell asleep? Where it was like, how many times are you going to siphon gas out of these cars?
Yeah, I was
how many
done.
Times do we need to see that?
I was done. After
it's
that.
Just like it's just really, really done. Poorly done.
It was done.
And
yeah.
I think what takes 60 minutes in that show, I think could take 15, 20, right?
With a commercial.
I mean, with a commercial, like the Breaking Bad days on AMC, right? So I mean, I feel like there's a hell of a lot of potential with Pluribus.
Yeah.
But it's like you said, like Taylor Swift needs a producer. And like she needs these great artists, and like you and I, we work with our editors to chop things down and change things up. I want pushback. Yeah. I think you need pushback. It's like the truth for movies. Like the director and the writer of the shows, it's important sometimes to have somebody who's helping chop that down. And like it's one of the things I remember. Like I working for Bill Simmons for 8 years, he talks about on his pod. He talked to us a lot about. He's like, that's too long. Like that mini documentary was 25 minutes. It could have been 10 minutes. And it's the truth in a lot of cases. And I think that's the case so far with Pluribus, which is unfortunate because I want to love that show. I want a show that I fall in love with.
Yeah.
I want to love it. I love Vince Gilligan. I just maybe the next episode, because the way it ends, which you didn't get to because you fell asleep completely understandably so because the show's so boring. The way it ends, it does potentially lead into something really good.
Yeah.
So
hopeful.
Hopeful, but I'm not as optimistic about Pluribus as I am about Momofuku.
No, you shouldn't put those in the same sentence, honestly speaking.
No.
The Momofuku is the Game of Thrones to what Pluribus is. So
shout out to Dave Chang and the whole Momofuku family. That was an awesome, awesome dinner. Yeah. Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Okay,
go finish the episode. And,
I will.
Try to stay awake.
Yeah.
All right, now to talk about some more teams from around the NBA, my old friend from The Ringer, Raheem Palmer. Raheem, how are you, man?
Man, life is good. I'm living in Las Vegas right now. NBA Cup weekend. It's just a tremendous time to be out here. So life is good.
It's been a really fun weekend. We're recording this on Monday afternoon. The game had not happened yet. By the time you hear this, it will have had happened. But we're going to talk about some stuff that's still relevant. Timely stuff here involving the Clippers. Because on Sunday's episode of my show, I asked Chris Haynes, hey, is there any chance Kawhi Leonard or James Harden actually get dealt by the Clippers? Do they actually go the other way and just pull the plug here? Because that's a conversation I've been having with a lot of people around the NBA. And I had a couple of conversations this week that lead me to believe, Raheem, that the Clippers would indeed be willing to trade Kawhi Leonard and James Harden in order to fill the gaps in their missing years without draft picks.
Yeah.
What are your initial thoughts on hearing this, like if the Clippers were indeed willing to just essentially blow it up despite not having their own pick this year?
So I've said this weeks ago. This is what they should be doing. You don't own your own draft picks. At this point, you're just making Oklahoma City Thunder better. You need to get something for those guys because you're not competing for a championship. At this point, you're not even competing for the playoffs. And it's unfortunate because obviously you sunk so much into this team. You trade for Bradley Beal. And it's pretty clear that, I mean, without Bradley Beal, you don't have enough there, and you're missing Norman Powell. Norman Powell was a tremendous piece for that roster last year. And now you're just dependent on James Harden, who I think is a guy who still has tremendous value in this league. He's one of the best floor raisers in this league. You put him with four other shooters and you're competitive. So I think there's a team who would want him. And then for Kawhi Leonard, maybe he's a little bit harder to trade, but as we saw from the Anthony Davis, Luka Doncic trade, there's always a GM dumb enough to make a move. Like, there's always somebody. And I think Kawhi Leonard is one of those guys who, if you put him on the right team, he could push you over the hump.
What's the right team for Kawhi Leonard? Who's dumb enough?
I don't know who's dumb enough, but, I mean, let's say if, you know, Detroit or Orlando said, you know what? The East is weak.
That's not dumb for those teams. That's like, hey, why not? Let's roll the dice.
Literally, like, you could go for it in the East and have a legitimate chance of getting to the championship. And you could say, oh, nobody's competing with Oklahoma City. Nobody's competing with Denver. Nobody's competing with Houston. We just don't know. Every single year, if you look at the last four or five, we had seven different champions in a row. And there's always an injury that kind of decides things.
Everybody thought OKC was going to win the cup.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it's just a single game elimination. A seven game series will be different. But like, everybody assumed it was going to be OKC versus the Knicks. And OKC was going to win the cup. And they're going to win 78 games. Yeah. And then they're going to win the finals.
Well, you're a Celtics fan. Last year, the Celtics were a shoo-in.
Of course. Everybody said Boston was going to repeat.
The year before that, the Nuggets. So it's always somebody. So it's like, why not take a chance?
You have to position yourself for an opportunity to win. So to your point with the Pistons, for example, I've long said that I think they should go for AD. Yeah. I similarly think, like, if they could flip Tobias Harris and a couple pieces to go get Kawhi Leonard, why the hell not? Why not? If Kawhi is, you know, your second guy next to Cade Cunningham, why not add him? I think that would make some sense there. I've been thinking also about, like, Houston. Yeah. I thought about Houston with Kawhi Leonard, but, like, it's really, really hard for them to get to the money.
Yeah.
It's Fred VanVleet's $25 million expiring. I just wonder if they'll do something with that in order to upgrade. I know a lot of people say they should go for a point guard. I'm sure some people would say, well, no, Houston should go after Harden. I don't think Harden makes sense.
They're already first in offensive rating.
Yes, and he changes what they are too much. To me, I think there's other teams that would make a lot more sense for Harden, and the team that I've heard would make a lot of sense for him and that could be connected to James Harden is the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah.
That, to me, makes sense.
Oh, without a doubt.
For both sides. For Harden to play next to Anthony Edwards, and then for the Wolves, he makes more sense than Ja Morant, in my opinion. He makes more sense next to Anthony Edwards, the balance between those two. Mm-hmm. I think that could be potentially a dream fit.
I love that. I love that fit. And I don't even think Houston needs to make a move.
I think I'd keep it as is.
And that's where I am.
Unless it's VanVleet, $25 million, and like maybe Dorian Finney-Smith, who we still haven't seen.
Yeah.
Like, you get the $37-38 million in a trade to put together. Mm-hmm. Unless it's those guys, I wouldn't do anything massive.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. Other than like maybe a backup point guard or something.
But Minnesota's been to two straight Western Conference Finals, and they have to take another step here.
Yeah.
And Naz Reid has just been just okay for them. I think there's some type of deal you could put together with like a Naz Reid, Mike Conley salary, and get to some amount of money for James Harden at 39 million this year, and I think that makes a lot of sense.
They need the playmaking. They need the playmaking Absolutely. And another creator, because I think that's the one thing that they lack.
Yes, and for what it's worth, I know a lot of people say, well, if we're trading this guy to the Wolves, we want Jaden McDaniels. I don't think the Wolves are going to trade Jaden McDaniels. That's my impression. The Wolves are not going to trade him. The Lakers. What have been your thoughts on the Lakers? Are you a Lakers fan?
So it's so funny. I'm a Lakers fan and a Sixers fan.
Okay.
And a lot of people say, oh, why do you have two teams? Well, look, Kobe and Allen Iverson were my favorite two players. Mm-hmm. And Kobe, to me, you could say he's from the main line. You could say he's from Ardmore, Lower Merion. That's Philadelphia. Like, West Philadelphia is here. You drive up the street, it's Lower Merion, Villanova area. So that's Philadelphia to me. So my favorite players were Kobe and Allen Iverson. So I was a Sixers and a Lakers fan.
Okay, I see. So, that makes sense. How are you feeling about the Lakers?
Our defense sucks. 27th in defensive rating, and we struggle with athletic teams. And if you go back to like 1976, there's only been three teams who won the title with the defensive rating lower than 10th.
One of them was the Lakers team, right? Yeah. I think it was the three-peat Shaq, Kobe Lakers team, but they just took it easy. It was like the third one.
It was the second one.
Okay, that's right, yes.
It's the 0-1 Lakers.
That's right, yes.
The other one was...
And then they turned it up
exactly.
In the playoffs.
Yeah, the other one was the 2018 Warriors.
That's right, yes.
So it's just... And then the other one was the Rockets, the second Rockets year.
Okay, I see.
I think it's the second Rockets year. So it's just... They struggle with athletic teams. We know that they can score. You got Luka Doncic. You got LeBron James. You got Austin Reeves. Austin Reeves probably the most improved player of the year. So they're fun for me to watch, but I don't take them seriously as a contender.
I mean, is there any solving the defense? Is there any move or anything that can happen internally?
I don't see it. I mean, in terms of just, you know, who can you trade?
Is it, in your opinion, is it interior? Is it perimeter? Is it just everything?
I think it's interior, but then also, I mean, when you have LeBron, like, since LeBron has come back, the defense has gotten worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were 19th in defensive rating, and then over the last 2 weeks, they're 27.
it just feels like it's a young man's game right now.
Yeah.
And like the Lakers feel old, especially defensively. Obviously, Luka's unbelievable, and Austin Reeves has had a tremendous year as well offensively. But like, it's just the Lakers, the Clippers, the Warriors, to different degrees. Obviously, the Clippers are at the bottom of the barrel. The Lakers have had a great record. The Warriors are in the middle. Different levels for each team. But and all three of them in their own ways, it's like they just feel old and slow.
That's exactly what it is.
I mean, the Warriors dropping these last two games since Stephen Curry comes back, and he's been awesome. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But the rest of that roster around him, it just like Draymond and Jimmy Butler are not elevating to the level that they need to support him. And none of the young guys have taken a leap to the level that Stephen Curry deserves still at this stage.
And then
of
you have
career.
A young guy in Kuminga who they're basically they don't want him.
They don't want
him. But they don't want to play him and they don't want to trade him. Such so it's a just shame. Like,
I mean, with Kuminga, like, I think it's inevitable that he's going to get traded. Like, at this point in time, I mean, he's not playing. He's a DNP CD for the Warriors. I think that's inevitable. To me, like, I think you have Kuminga's salary, and in all likelihood, you're going to try to use that $20, $25 million to get something. But is it anything that's going to move the needle enough to actually turn this team into a championship contender? I don't see that path. I mean, I think for the Warriors, like Joe Lacob, and they've always wanted Giannis. It's always about Giannis. But in order to get Giannis, you have to give up either Kuminga plus Draymond or Jimmy Butler. And both of those paths, like Butler, I mean, you know, he's 11 shots a game. At this point, he really was not good on Sunday. The Warriors lost against the Blazers, in which Stephen Curry scored 48 points. He's not giving enough to that team. I think Warriors fans are starting to see who he is. But with Draymond Green, as much as like he's not in his prime level, he's not defending the way he did against Wemby a couple of weeks back when he looked like his defensive player of the year self. He still has that in him, even if he's not giving it to you every night. I can't fathom going down the trade Draymond path in order to get Giannis. I can fathom the Butler path, but then the Butler path is like, who would want Jimmy Butler? There weren't a lot of teams that wanted him when he was, you know, complaining his way out of Miami. And so I feel like it's possible they're just stuck.
That's
what I worry about with Steph and the Warriors, is that they're just stuck with this.
That's how I feel. But honestly, I mean, I think everybody on the team except for Steph Curry should be on the trade block.
Oh, for sure. Like, I agree.
The entire team. And I think the thing with Jimmy.
What is Draymond and without the Warriors? What is the Warriors without Draymond, though? Like, they feel linked together.
It feels Steph and Draymond are linked together, because I don't think Steph would be very happy if Draymond.
I think Steph is an untouchable, obviously, but Draymond is like a tier below.
Yeah.
I don't want to trade Draymond.
I mean, I wouldn't want to, but at this point in time, it's like, what are you getting from him on a night to night basis? Offensively, he's not giving you much. Obviously, he is a playmaker, but I mean, he's a below average shooter. So a lot of times the Warriors are playing 4-on-5 offensively, and he can bring it off defensively. I mean, at times, obviously, but it's just tough. I do think they're stuck, unfortunately. And I would love to see them not waste the last years of Steph Curry's prime, but it feels like their window ended when Draymond punched Jordan Poole.
Kind of did.
Like, that was the end of it.
God, did you see on Threads, Draymond did a Q&A a few weeks back?
Oh, I didn't see that.
I don't know. Draymond made a joke about, well, not a joke. Someone joked at him.
Oh, I did see that.
About punching Jordan Poole. He was like, oh, man. Like, admitting the seriousness of what he did. I forget exactly what he said. I'm trying to find it.
The one thing I'll add is they didn't draft well. You got Wiseman, you got Kuminga, you got Moody. And none of their lotto picks, like, panned out, ultimately. And if your lotto picks are not going to pan out, then ultimately you're drafting at the bottom of the draft. When you get in the lottery, those picks have to pan out, and they just didn't.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, ultimately, and like that didn't pan out. And then the Jimmy Butler deal hasn't panned out either.
Yeah.
I think there's a strong argument to be made that you'd be better off with Andrew Wiggins at this point. Andrew Wiggins, a better defender than Jimmy Butler, a better shooter than Jimmy Butler, a higher volume shooter than Jimmy Butler as well. I mean, Butler is undoubtedly a better player in a vacuum than Andrew Wiggins. But given what this team needs right now, I don't feel like Butler is hitting that criteria in the ways that Wiggins would. That said, Butler obviously has a far higher ceiling than this month. 9.8 shots per game his last four games. Mm-hmm. 11 shots against the Blazers in a loss. 11 shots in a loss against the Timberwolves. And Stephen Curry in both of those games went absolutely nuclear with 48 points against the Blazers. And then against the Timberwolves, he had 39.
Yeah.
You're not getting enough offense from your second star. The issue is, like, Kerr after the Sunday game against the Blazers, he's like, it's on me. He's taking accountability as a coach should. I need to get Butler more involved in the offense. But this is who Jimmy is.
Yeah.
He's he coasts through regular seasons. Mm. He took 13 shots a night in Miami. Mm. It's always who he is. And then he sometimes turns it on in the postseason. And sometimes it works to an amazing level. Mm. And sometimes it leads to some duds.
Yeah.
But he doesn't give you this over the course of the regular season. And that's where, like, I look at the situation for the Warriors. They're fighting for a play-in spot right now, Raheem. They're the 8 seed right now, 13-14 on the year. And you look at the Western Conference standings, they're not near the level of those teams ahead of them. And I think that's a shame considering the level Steph is still at right now. He is still a guy who can be the best player on a title team.
Mm.
But the team around him is not at the level even the Lakers are. Like, all the things you said about their flaws, how they feel old. And so that team just feels significantly further ahead than the Warriors do right now. And I just don't know what that move is.
It's crazy. Know. Like, I mean, the last two games, Jimmy Butler has 31 points. 16 against the Blazers, 15 against the Wolves. And it's just like, yo, that's what I need in one game from you. Like, Steph and Jimmy needs to be 1A and 1B.
I mean, he's got to be playoff Jimmy. He can't be play-in Jimmy.
Yeah.
And that's what he is right now. That's what he's been most of his career, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think right now, if you look at the best challengers for the Oklahoma City Thunder, it's still the Nuggets. It's still the Rockets. Mm-hmm. Is there anybody else you're putting on that level? Are you putting the Spurs on that level after they beat OKC in the semis of the NBA Cup? Or is it just those two teams, in your opinion, as the best challengers to the Oklahoma City Thunder?
I need to see more from the Spurs. But right now, it's definitely the Rockets and the Nuggets. And I actually prefer the Rockets over the Nuggets.
Really? Why is that?
Just matchup-wise. I always felt like they matched up really well against Oklahoma City. Like, if you even if you take this year's game out of it, last six times they played, they're 3-3. So it's just something about that matchup and the fact that Oklahoma City, they're not a good defensive rebounding team. And the Rockets are just so big.
Oh, yeah. So the Adams and Şengün lineup is just
And the
brutal.
One thing they needed was somebody who can score in a half court. And now that you got KD, I think it pushes them. Like, I think that's a 7-game series.
Could be, for sure. I mean, I think with Houston, I had Kelly Eco on the podcast, and then I had Chris Haynes on Sunday. And both of them, you know, Kelly particularly said that he doesn't think Houston's going to sacrifice their future assets in order to go get Giannis. Mm. And he said the Spurs, that seems to be the case as well. But with the Rockets, do you think that they should be going for a Giannis, or do you think just stick with what you got? Because as you said, you think they're already the best challenger to the Thunder. Like, what would you be doing if you're in that front office?
I would stick with it. I just like this team. And I mean, I think a lot of people may call me crazy, but it took, like, Oklahoma City has lost one game this year outside of the
Yep.
But it took an act of God for Portland to beat them. But it took an act of God for Oklahoma City to beat Houston. It took a double OT game, and KD missed a free throw, which would have put them up 3. So it's just like, I felt like Houston is giving them the best run all year outside of that Portland game. And that was a bad spot for Oklahoma City because they had some guys out. It was back-to-back. That was opening night. On the road. I think that game taught me a lot.
Being here in Vegas, how long have you lived here now?
I've lived here since January.
Since January, so not a long time.
But honestly, it's felt longer than that because, I don't know, when you were at the Ringer, I literally would come out here. I came out here back in 2022, and I lived in the Cosmopolitan for 8 months
straight. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I was literally recording podcasts in
the, you in the Cosmo for 8 months?
I lived there. Like, I came out here for Canelo GGG 3 and just didn't go home for 8 months.
Wow.
And that was a normal thing for me, like, the last couple of years. I mean, it wouldn't be always 8 months, but I would come out here for a fight, end up staying a month, come out here for a fight, end up staying 3 months.
I have a hard enough time staying in Vegas for 4 nights. I'm losing my voice. Something about the air in these casinos.
But it was crazy.
I don't drink, so it's not alcohol. It's not. I don't smoke. It's just the air in the casinos. I lose my voice.
But here's the thing. Imagine, all right, you living in a casino. All your meals are taken care of. I had people washing my clothes.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I was going shopping every single day. So I would wake up. If I had a podcast that day, I'd record a podcast. If I didn't, I'd go to the gym. I'd figure out what I was betting on. I'd go downstairs and bet. Take myself out to eat, go shopping. And I did it every day.
Sounds like an interesting life.
Yeah, just literally every day.
It's the opposite of me. I'm at home in my pajamas playing Call of Duty.
And then, like, occasionally, like, if it was a boxing match, I go to a boxing match, I go to a concert. So basically, it was just like I lived in a playground.
That's what Vegas is.
Yeah, I literally just lived in the midst of chaos. And after a while, I was like, all right, I got to get off the strip and just move here because, like, it was people going on vacation. Like, one day, like, security came up to me and was like, yo, why the hell have you been here so long? And then they started noticing things about me. They're like, yo, you got 3 cell phones. What do you do?
Wait, well, tell me what each cell phone is for.
So obviously you worked at the Ringer.
Yeah, you have your work phone. Your work phone.
But then I just had 2 phones on my
Why?
Own. Like AT&T, they had like a deal. Mm-hmm. Like they were just giving out like, yo, like $1 iPhone.
Is there one for the boys, one for the girls? Or like what's the situation?
It was just a backup iPhone. Like, why? KD has the burner phone. I needed a burner phone. Like if they're going to give me an iPhone for like $1 and then say, all right, yo, it's only $10 a month for extra line. Why not just have a burner phone just because you know how quickly these phones die?
That's true. I have had like 2 consecutive iPhones that have died in a year.
Yeah.
And like, I don't
No, feel but like, even on the day to day, you walking around, you.
Okay, I know. Battery wise.
Yeah, battery wise. So now you just always got an extra phone.
Okay, interesting.
And it's only like $10. It's like, what, $10 a month? So, you waste $10.
I mean, I don't know. I don't want all that luggage on my pockets the whole day. But I think you talk about how it's a playground Vegas is.
Yeah.
How do you think Vegas would be for an NBA host city? How with an NBA team here in Vegas, how would that be?
So the Golden Knights do really well and the Aces do really well. So I get the sense, I mean, but the Aces, obviously they play in the Mandalay Bay. So it's going to be a smaller arena. But this city is loyal to teams who are good. But if they're not good, you have what you have with the Raiders where every single game is a road game. Like, literally, you go – I went to the Raiders-Cowboys, and I'm a Cowboys fan. The Cowboys fans took over that arena. So it'll do well because people will say, all right, you know, I'm going to fly out and see my favorite team. But it's just if they're not doing well, then
I think it's very odd how the NBA keeps kicking the can down the road.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think expansion is going to happen until the 2030s at this point. I don't think you're going to see a team in Vegas or Seattle or anywhere else until after the 2030-31 season. So that's quite a ways away. You're going to see the NBA European League before we see expansion in the NBA.
You're a big EuroLeague guy?
No, I mean, I watch for draft stuff, but I'm not watching for competition necessarily. I just don't have the time.
Yeah, it makes sense.
In order to invest in it. Why are you betting on EuroLeague games?
Oh my God. I gave out a EuroLeague future last year and it hit.
Oh wow.
On Fenerbahce. I gave that out.
What? You're a pro. You're literally a pro. This is what you do.
Yeah, but I got into EuroLeague because I mean, what it was like during the day, I just wasn't doing it.
You find anything. It's better to bet EuroLeague than it is NBA?
The limits are lower. But it's a softer market.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
So less gain with a win because it's lower limits.
Like you said. The NBA markets are sharp.
Yeah.
But the EuroLeague market, the disparity between the teams at times, it's just like, all right, this is a joke.
I'll tell you what, though, even though I thought about, you know, before I left LA to move back to Massachusetts a little over a year ago, I was like, oh, maybe like what it would be like to live in Vegas. I thought about it, like no state taxes, you know, an NBA team will be here eventually and, you know, like develop my footing there and see what it's like for a while. And eventually I determined, I'm just going to move back to Massachusetts and lay my roots there. But I still love visiting Vegas.
Yeah.
And I went to this place on Saturday morning, the Hall of Excellence.
Oh, I've been there.
Have you been there?
I went opening weekend.
Oh my God, dude. They have like Jordan's first pair of Air Jordans, like Kobe memorabilia. Mm-hmm. Like for me, like a Tom Brady guy.
I love Tom Brady.
Dude, they had all 7 of his Super Bowl rings.
I saw it.
And used jerseys and stuff like that. And like, I'm not a big audio tour guy, but at the Hall of Excellence, the guy Howard at the front desk, who's the director of the Hall of Excellence, he explained to me with this audio guide, like it's like Morgan Freeman voicing some of the stuff and Marv Albert and then some players like Tom Brady talking about each of his 7 Super Bowl rings where like on the app, you click a button and it plays it. I was like, emotional as a Patriots fan, like just thinking about my dad and memories of like for any sports fan, like you got to go to the Hall.
Yeah, you definitely go.
You have to go. It's awesome. It's unbelievable.
So I went opening weekend and Jim Gray was there.
And he donated a lot of the stuff.
He actually, he thanked me for coming. We got a picture together.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, so it was like, it was amazing. And I'm a big Tom Brady fan. Like I always, like Tom Brady is probably my, like I have like five athletes who are like my top five. He's in my top five. But I always tell people like, yo, Tom Brady and people, I know people get tired of this, but I say Tom Brady is like Alonzo from Training Day. You give him 18 months, he going to give you a career because it's just like, it did not matter who was out there with him, whether it was like Deion Branch or Randy Moss. Mm. He was just there. So I love
Troy Brown.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like seeing so his Super Bowl rings were like, and they even had his Bucks jersey too.
Yes. They did have the Bucks jersey in there as well. I mean, it was just so awesome. And like, I mean, there was like a Muhammad Ali, there's a Babe Ruth bat.
Yeah.
The bat from like the Babe Ruth point, you know, calling his shot. Some Jackie Robinson memorabilia. Like it was.
They had Muhammad Ali tickets. They had.
Oh my God.
They had Canelo's, I think Canelo's WBC belt.
Yes. I saw that.
I'm a big boxing guy. So I was just like, and then seeing the Kobe stuff, they had his, I think it's
the 81 point game.
Yeah.
I think the shoes from that. I know there's a ticket stub from that. I think maybe the shoes from that, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I think they had his high school jersey too.
Yes. I believe so. Yeah. But it's just like, unbelievable.
Yes.
Some of the stuff.
If you're a sports fan, come and see that.
Yeah.
It's in the Fontainebleau.
Like it just blows my mind. Like, I totally exceeded. I was one of my friends, Dumin Rangula, a guest of the show. He recommended I go. And I was like, yeah, sure. I got time on Saturday morning. After I pick up my car, I'll go get it. And I'll go there. And first thing I did, it was like, it totally exceeded my expectations. I did rent a car. Mm-hmm. Like, I rented a Cybertruck because why not?
How is that? I've never driven one.
You should rent one on a Turo. And like, it's awesome.
I'm definitely going to do that.
Make sure it's got full self-driving just so you can experience a robot driving you around. Because that's I drove through Red Rock Canyon and just had the car drive me around like I'm on a tram the whole time.
That's amazing.
And I drove through the Valley of Fire as well. Have you been there?
That's on my list. I still haven't been there.
So I don't think I did through Red Rock Canyon. I've been before. Mm-hmm. I went there with my mom a few years ago when she visited Vegas with me, and like it's so beautiful.
It is.
It's like there's so many nice places to stop and go, and just like driving through, just letting the car. It's like you're on a tram.
Yeah.
Just the whole way through, just you're able to like just let the car handle all the turning and everything, and you just appreciate all the beauty. And same thing with the Valley of Fire. I drove that on Monday morning, and oh my God.
Yeah.
Like there's Lake Mead, is it called?
Lake Mead.
You drive through Lake Mead on the way to the Valley of Fire.
Mm.
At least that's the way I went.
Yeah.
And like, it's just like stunning view after stunning view, man.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta make that happen.
The first time I went to Red Rock Canyon, I rented a Continental Bentley. and I pulled the top off and I rode through Red Rock Canyon. That was the first time
that's awesome. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you gotta rent a nice car to go through there. It's just like top down or a robot.
Yeah.
One of the extremes, you know, and just enjoy it.
You gotta have a nice car there.
And I drove some of it today with Valley of Fire. Just, you know,
just
have some fun with the side.
That's on my list. I think I'm gonna go this week now that you told me.
You should definitely go rent a Cybertruck from Sebastian, I think his name was.
Okay.
It was a good time.
Mm.
So you haven't drove one of those yet?
I still haven't. One of the only things I've never driven a Tesla.
Interesting. I mean, it's a different experience if you haven't, because the one foot pedal, acceleration and stopping, the regenerative braking.
Mm.
So it takes a little getting used to.
Right now, I'm like, I drive a Lexus, but I'm really a Porsche guy. That's what I'm like. That's on my list.
A Porsche guy.
Yeah, I'm a Porsche guy.
You could rent a Porsche for Valley of Fire too.
It's so crazy. When I was living in the Cosmo, I rented a Porsche for like 8 months.
This guy is living the life.
I literally just
The Cosmo is also like the coolest hotel.
Yeah.
In my opinion. I love walking through.
It's the only one on the strip with a balcony.
Oh, for the hotel rooms.
Yeah.
Really? So is that the only one?
It's the only one on the strip.
Huh.
Yeah, and that's what makes it cool. Like if you in the smoking cigars and stuff like
but
that.
But why? Why? I would think I feel like the Hangover movies make it seem like they're everywhere.
Well, I mean, you don't want balconies everywhere. You might have people jumping off.
Of course not. You don't want that.
Like you just don't want them everywhere.
But I'm surprised it's the only one on the strip.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
MGM Signature Suites have it, but that's off the strip.
Cosmo's cool, but I think my favorite casino to walk around now is the Venetian.
Yeah, that's pretty
the Venetian. Cool. We're recording this from here because like the stores and like the sky, you know, it's not the sky, but it's like it's just beautiful. It's cool. Like they have nice stores, great restaurants. Every summer league, I come to Cut with some friends and we get like tons of steak and like even the if you don't eat steak or you're vegan or whatever, the sides you could eat, fill up on the sides. The restaurants here are amazing. What's the name of that fish restaurant here in the Venetian? Milos. It's like some pricey fish place. I'm not a fish guy there, but like they got this octopus on the menu.
I
it's the best octopus
you ever been to Chica?
No, I've not been to Chica.
You like Peruvian
food? Is that here?
Yeah. You like Peruvian food?
I've had it before, but not in quite a long time, no. There's somewhere in LA I went to a
There's
place.
This thing called a Chica, and not to advertise the restaurant and everything like that, but there's this thing called the wood fire paradilla, and it comes with like steak, Peruvian chicken. It's like all these different meats. It's like $250. You bring some friends, or if you want to go by yourself and eat leftovers, it's phenomenal. And then they have like performances,
and that's here in the Venetian.
Yeah, it's here in the Venetian.
I mean, like the fact, like every time I'm in Vegas, I try to go to the Sphere. Like tonight, Monday night, we're gonna go see the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
and so like it's literally connected to the Venetian. I always love the walk from the Sphere through the Venetian to the parking or Uber pickup, whatever. After shows, there's always like a buzz in the crowd. Have you been to Sphere yet?
I still haven't been to the Sphere.
You were here for 8 months.
Yeah, I've been
living here.
I've been busy. that's the one. You know what it is? I want to go see the Wizard of Oz.
It's playing like three times a day.
And the fact that I live down the street.
Like 11 a.m., 2 p.m., 5 p.m., 8 p.m. You have four chances pretty much every day.
I'm going to go. Like, I've been doing so much.
I know. You're a busy guy.
And you know, here's the crazy thing. I've spent a lot of time at the Venetian, too.
The Venetian's
because,
nice.
Like, and people don't realize this. In Vegas, you could only stay in a hotel for 28 days straight. Because otherwise, you get, like, squatter's laws or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
So the first time, like, I was there, and they didn't realize it. I had stayed, like, 55 days straight. And then one day, they just came up to my room and was like, yo, you got to leave now. Check out for one day. You can come back.
Oh.
So I checked out once the Venetian. And then I came back.
What a weird rule.
Yeah.
But I guess it makes sense. Raheem, thank you so much for joining me today. Please let people know where they can find all your stuff.
You can find me on the Ringer Gambling Show. You can find me on FanDuel. Well, it's not FanDuel. We don't do FanDuel TV anymore. We do FanDuel Sports Network each and every Sunday. Ringer NFL pregame show. Myself, Cousin Sal, John Jaskrzemski, Joe House. We give out our NFL plays. We do a lot of NFL stuff. Like, I love the NBA. And honestly, NBA is probably my favorite sport. So I'm glad you brought me on. I got a chance to talk some NBA. But right now, we're so NFL focused right now. But that's where you can find my work. You can also find me. I am Rostradamus on Twitter and on Instagram. So
my Patriots blowing the game against the Bills. Can't believe it. I didn't even see the second half. I was in the middle of recording with Amin El Hassan on Sunday. I turned my head to the rumor recording. I see the Patriots are down. What?
That was, honestly, though, that was a dead spot for you. I was all over the Bills. I think that was a good thing for y'all.
Is it really? Losing a chance to get a bye, potentially, after
because
the Broncos had a big week.
You got
to
go through some adversity.
Fair.
Y'all won like 10 games in a row.
Fair. Totally fair.
And it's like you'd rather take
and
that
this was
loss.
A really bad loss.
Yeah.
Blowing a big lead after the bye as well.
Now, if y'all lose to Baltimore, that's when it gets scary.
After Baltimore just shut out the Bengals.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
What a weird week for him after he had his press conference last week, not having fun and all that.
Yeah.
What happened with Burrow in that game?
You heard his press conference this week. He said he's not having fun.
Yeah.
It gave me a real Andrew Luck vibe.
Yeah. Either retirement or give me a trade.
Yeah. But then also, I think they were due for some regression. Last week, they were like 10 for 13 on third down. All that came crashing down to earth.
Yeah, he screwed me over with my fantasy league this week.
Oh, man.
Should have started Brock Purdy. Should have started him.
Oh,
I picked up Purdy to block my opponent from picking him up. Use my waiver money. And
Purdy was the perfect start. They were going against the Titans.
I just stuck with my guy.
I stuck with my guy. He has such a high floor that
I
you
know.
Can't.
Exactly. Instead, he just stunk it up. It is what it is. You win some, you lose some. Raheem, you win a lot.
I try. I try to be like you, man.
Thank you so much for joining me today, man.
No doubt. Thank you, man.
Big thank you again to Raheem Palmer and Kelly Eco for joining me on today's episode. Big thank you to the entire Yahoo Sports crew for recording these episodes this week and this past weekend live in Las Vegas. It was a lot of fun out there. We'll be back again later in the week with Tom Haverstraw on Thursday talking about everything else going on around the NBA. Have a good day, everybody.